Here we go. Fascinating topic. You know, by the way, if anybody has interest, I mean, obviously this evening, this Tuesday evening slot has been dedicated for the most part over the past few weeks, even from before Pesach already, to talking about issues related to emotional health. Obviously, I'm a rabbi and a therapist, and so therefore it's... therefore, I have the opportunity to give a dual perspective, if you will, a perspective that comes from both the world of psychology as well as the world of rabbinics, and it's a pleasure to be able to have this opportunity to both think about these issues and prepare these issues and talk about these issues. So if anybody has any specific topics that would like to be addressed, I'm more than happy to hear from you what those might be. Tonight we're going to talk about going from weary to cheery. So the concept for tonight's talk comes from my wife, in which she says, you know, the first few talks we talked about how can you be successful in the new reality? Well, the new reality has become an old reality. And so for many of us, we settled into a certain kind of routine, but it's also getting old quickly, if I may dare say such a thing. And as a result of that, it, in a way, it becomes even more challenging than it was before. See, in the beginning, it's like, okay, here's the new reality. Let's figure out how we're going to meet that challenge. Now, where are we holding? Week 8 or something like that? It's how much longer can this go on? How much longer can we handle this? Many people are talking about going back to work or stores opening, phase 1, phase 2, stage 1, stage 2, and the, you know, shul's reopening. I can't tell you. I'm not an expert. That's not what you called in tonight, is to find out, you know, when we're going to be opening the shuls. That's not for tonight's discussion. That's a shul discussion, which we theoretically could have at some point. But for now, really want to talk about is how do you go from weary to cheery? Because we are weary in a sense. Many of us are already weary of this new reality. So how do we get to a place where we can be cheery, where we can be happier? From an etymological perspective, the word happy in English is related to the word happenstance, or hapless. In Hebrew, it would be mikre, which basically would mean accidental. That means if you happen to be happy, lucky you. If you're not happy, well, that stinks for you, as they say. That's horrible. Sorry about that. But the truth is that according to the Torah, as well as psychology, simcha, or happiness, is related to the word sham moach. Just take the letters of the word simcha. Sin, mem, chet, hey. It's the same letters as sham moach. Shin, mem, mem, ches. And what does that mean? That where you put your mind, that where you put your brain, is that's where it's going to be. So if you want to be happy, so then be happy. It's not so complicated. I remember when I was in yeshiva, this goes back, I'd say, about 20 years ago. There was a bachur in yeshiva. I won't mention his name. He has a unique sort of name. I only remember one bachur in the entire yeshiva with that name. And he was very depressed. And so the Rosh Yeshiva of Kolesky called him, and he goes, "Tell me something, Yaakov." His name wasn't really Yaakov. He says, "Tell me something, Yaakov. I hear you're not doing so well." He goes, "Yeah, Rebbe, I'm really depressed." He goes, "Well, tell me something. When you're learning well, you're spending time in the Beis Medrash, are you happy?" He says, "Yeah, I'm very happy." Then he goes, "So then why are you depressed? Go to the Beis Medrash, sit down and learn, and you'll become happy." Now, maybe that was a very simplistic, wet perspective and approach, but it's not a crazy approach, because essentially what it's saying is there are things you can do to become happy. And that's what we're going for tonight as well. There are things that you can do to generate happiness, or to generate those hormones and in your brain that release, those neural connections, fire up those neurons so that you end up feeling those feelings that are pleasant and that you enjoy feeling. Okay, so simcha is shamoach. That's where the brain is. But let's talk about what does that mean exactly. Where does your brain need to be happy? We're familiar with our reality. The reality that we're going through throughout the world, Jewish, non-Jewish communities alike. And we don't need to belabor the points. We're all very intimately familiar with the details. But it is important to realize that in order to talk about a topic, we have to define our terms. in order to have a license to talk about issues, in order to give us license to speak about them, we have to be in touch with our reality, we have to crystallize our thoughts. We have to be as clear as possible in our thoughts and in our speech so that when we speak about these things and think about these things, we're articulate and we're clear, and that will help us attain our goals. Do you remember how we talked about naming the monster, or name it to tame it? That if you have a particular feeling and you can identify what that feeling is, you could put a name to it. It helps you kind of work through it. Same thing is true over here. So what the quarantine is simply this. It's a trauma. It's not a simple trauma. I'm not going to use the word complex trauma, but it's an experience for which we have no reference point. We have no history. Nobody has any memory of having gone through something like this. I remember the first couple of weeks I was talking on the phone with my mom, with other people that are a little bit older than I am. And I would ask them something like, do you remember anything like this at all? And everyone's like, no, never. I never went through anything in my life that was like this. So as a result, we have no roadmap. We have no plan. And our brains, even in the circuitry of our brain, we don't have a reflex or a reaction for coping. Or really our only reflex is to not cope. But that's not an option. Not coping is not an option. And obviously that's why you're tuning in tonight, because we want to know how can we cope? What can we do to improve ourselves? What can we do to go from being wary to being cheery? And each of us in different ways, whether physically, cognitively, emotionally, or spiritually, or even more than one of these dimensions, we are all having reactions. And here's the thing. And this is one of the things that makes it what Dr. Fox calls a catastrophic trauma. Regardless of how competent, educated, or bright you may be, what's going on in the world is catastrophic. And every day brings news that we don't want to hear, unknowns, rampant uncertainties, not knowing where it's headed. And even medical experts don't really, there's so much unknown. And that makes it more difficult, and therefore it's what's called a catastrophic trauma. So we have to be open to reality. And the reality is that this trauma, we're going to use the word trauma, is that, you know, it may make an imprint on ourselves and our children. In Hebrew, you'd say it would make a roshem. It makes a difference to who we are. And it's something that we, you know, God forbid somebody is in the ICU, they may even have, you know, PTSD as a result of that later on. But even before you get there, that doesn't matter if you're ill or not ill. For all of us, our world is different. And because our reality is different, it affects our thinking, it affects our ability to focus and concentrate, it affects our emotions. We may feel sad, we may feel anxious or worried or frightened, irritable, frustrated, tired. Our reality can affect our behavior. It can affect our physical sense of well-being. Some people are hurting physically, whether or not they're ill or not. They're hurting physically. And not only that, on top of all that, it conjures up a spiritual challenge as well. And when it comes to the spiritual challenge, what can we do to find purpose? How do we make the most of it? So whenever there's trauma, and what is trauma? Trauma is the world changing. That which was once familiar is no longer the reality. Dr. Fox has a term, he calls it our assumptive realities, the things that we've taken for granted. All of our lives we can no longer take for granted. But we're thinking mindful people, and that's why we called in tonight. And that's why we are on this on Zoom. And we're looking for a way to get through it. Bezat Hashem, we will. And that's the purpose of tonight's talk, to go from dreary to weary. And so I think there are 8 steps here to consider, and we'll go through them one by one. If anybody has any questions, the best way to ask is by the chat. And at the end of the class, you can also unmute yourself and ask questions verbally as well. I think the first one is going to resonate with a lot of people. I know that it resonated with me when I read about it. One of the great difficulties of emotional reactions or psychological upheaval when we face an actual crisis, one of the great difficulties is that we start to think there's something wrong with us. Does that ring a bell? Those of you that I can see your video, you're probably nodding your heads a little bit. You start to think, oh, there's something wrong with me. There's some deficiency in me. There's something weird about me. Because I mean, I look around, other people seem to be okay, and here I am, and I'm not feeling right. So it's vital that we accept that most of us are essentially normal people. I'm going to repeat that line. I think it's a very important line, and it's a very funny line in some ways. I need you to accept, I want my family to accept, I need myself to accept that when a person has a crisis, if they're feeling something, the way we are, our thoughts, our moods, our mood energy, our feelings, whatever reaction we may be having, they're all normal in circumstances that are hardly normal. As Viktor Frankl said, an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation, totally normal. So yeah, most of us are essentially normal people. Most of the people that you know are probably essentially normal people. But there are environmental pressures, external stressors, changes in our lives. As we said before, our assumptive reality has changed. And as a result, our minds, our hearts, our spirits, they're all reacting to these intense changes, these upheavals. And when we do have these reactions, then we feel distressed. And there's a relationship here. There's an equation here that commensurate with the objective stress that we're dealing with, we feel distressed. In other words, we are stressed and therefore we feel distressed. Or as my wife put it when I was discussing it with her, we're stressed about being stressed, or we're anxious about being anxious. And a lot of us can relate to that. Why am I feeling so anxious? What's wrong with me that I feel this way? And that makes me feel more anxious. Anxiety begets anxiety. And if I allow my voice to get faster and higher, we'll get even more stressed out about it and even more anxious. Somebody's wondering that all these are contributors, but what do I think causes the most stress? It's a question that's a very individual question. It depends on the person. For some people, it's parnasa. For some people, it's not being able to get out of the house. For some people, it's the relationships. It's impossible to say what causes the most stress. There's no one size fits all answer to that question. So this is the first point. The first point is, whatever you're feeling is okay to feel. I remember years ago, I had a client who had sat Shiva, and they asked me, you know, why is it that my father, when we're sitting Shiva, all he does is talk and talk and talk and talk. And my mother, when we sit Shiva, she doesn't say a word. So I brought it up with Dr. Fox, and he said to me, he says, they're both right. There's no right way or wrong way to go through those extreme difficulties. There's no one way to react. And however a person is reacting, it's totally okay, because that's what they need in that moment, and that's totally fine. So that's number one. Number one is we're all normal. Number two is validating. We talked a little bit about this in the past couple of classes, but we're gonna talk a little bit more about it and elaborate a little bit from what we've said in the past. Looking at ourselves with openness and honesty. Imagine spouse to spouse, friend to friend, and certainly parent to child. Certainly parent to child. Can everyone hear me okay? If you could see me, yeah? Okay, someone is saying that they could not hear me. Let me just respond. Others can hear me, please keep trying. Hopefully that'll work. Okay. So when someone opens up to you, validate them. Don't try to talk them out of it. How many of you have gone through that experience where someone says something to you, they open up, they're a little bit vulnerable, and then they try to talk you out of it? And people do that naturally, either because they're uncomfortable with your discomfort or because they're just kind people. And that's the way of a Jew, of being a caring person, is to help someone with their distress, take away some of their distress. And, you know, under normal circumstances, you know, it's not, the end of the world. Although I'll tell you something. One of my kids had a hard time one day with something school related. And I said to her, you know, it's not such a big deal. That is the opposite of validating, okay? That is the exact opposite of validating. What I did was I invalidated how she felt in that moment. I said to her, it's really not such a big deal. What did I do? I invalidated her. How do you think she responded? She shut down. She ran out. That was the end of the conversation. Yeah, 2 points for the therapist and the rabbi who's trying to be a good parent over here, okay? Baruch Hashem, I don't do it every time they're vulnerable and open up. Okay? Thank God it doesn't happen every time, right? But once in a while, you know, we make mistakes. So if somebody opens up to you, to validate it, don't try to talk them out of it. But at times like this, the key is to listen non-critically, non-judgmentally. What they're experiencing is totally normal because we are in a sad and frightening time for many people. That's how they feel. To listen receptively and attentively. We talked about that last week at length. And just as we would not want people to shut us down, don't shut them down. Okay. Self-awareness. Self-awareness is something that we talked about again in the past a little bit. We will elaborate on it tonight. Do a self-scan. What's a scan? We know what a scanner does, right? Takes a picture of an entire sheet of paper, the roller or the light moves along and it takes a whole picture. You can do what we call a self-awareness scan, which is to think about yourself. I'll give you a mnemonic here. It's a kind of a funny mnemonic. And it's used in the world of trauma, probably kind of meant tongue-in-cheek or not. But the mnemonic is SCABS. Have you ever heard that before? SCABS, S-C-A-B-S. So that stands for spiritual, cognitive, affective, which are feelings, behavioral, and somatic, which is the way that your body feels, okay? So if you do a self scan, you take some time for yourself, away from the noise and the pressure, to make that niche for yourself where you have some welcome solitude as opposed to the pain of being lonely. You know, we're all familiar with being alone versus being lonely. Some people can be lonely in a room full of people. Some people can be alone and you know, be very happy. So the welcome solitude as opposed to the pain of being lonely. Just take some time for yourself. Just take some time. I'm going to review them, yes. Take some time to do some breathing. Allow yourself to be composed, to listen to your body, to tune out the noise around you, to turn off the distractions around you, to listen to your thoughts, to allow yourself to register your emotions, to pick up on what you're doing physically. That's your behavior. Maybe you have tics, maybe you're itching. So again, cognitive is your thoughts. Become aware of what you're thinking. Somatic, be aware of what feelings you have in your body. Do you have any stress in your body anywhere? Is your stomach in knots? Are your ears getting red? All right, do you have headaches? Do you have tight knees? Or you know, maybe your hands are getting tight and red. Everyone has different somatic experiences. Are your shoulders tightening, your lower back? What's going on? Behavioral is what's your body doing. Emotional is how do you feel? And then spiritual. We're going to talk a lot tonight about the spiritual aspect of things. It's a very important aspect. And be mindful of the present. Be attentive, not critically. Don't judge yourself. Just stay focused. Relax your breathing. And ask yourself, how am I coping? Once I know how I'm coping, I know how I'm doing. Affective is emotional, yes. If I know how I'm doing, then and only then can I really, if I know how I'm doing, that's when I can start to deal with myself. So that's the advantage of having that self-scan, of becoming aware. Because a lot of us are not naturally tuned into our own selves. We're not aware of our own thoughts. Or we're not aware of our feelings. But we can learn to pay attention to those things. We certainly can do that. Okay, so the first one was, you're normal. Okay, that was the first key. The second key is validation, and the third key is the self-awareness. The self-awareness. Number four, and again, here, these are all different tools that we can use, and really we should utilize all of them. So number four is routine, schedule, structure, and how important those are. But we're gonna talk about it in a different way than we've talked about it in the past. Chazal says, Shinoi Veses Tchilas Choli, which means that when our rhythms are altered, people start to get sick. Do you know how I don't know if you're like this. I know I'm very much like this. Do you know how if the weather changes all of a sudden from chilly to like really hot, chilly to really hot, people get sick? That's me. That happens to me all the time. In fact, even from air conditioning. You know, in the summertime, I carry a sweater around because people keep it so cold inside and so hot outside. My body doesn't do well with that dramatic, very quick those quick transitions. So here we have, there's an importance of making sure that our rhythms in our new reality are structured, are scheduled to bring routine into our lives as much as possible. There's so much that's out of our control, but there's so much that's in our control as well. What time do we get up? What time do we go to sleep? Structure throughout our day. In addition to everything that I need to do, sleeping, eating, exercise, hydration, obviously those are all important. By the way, I don't know about you, I have a harder time staying hydrated in this new routine than I normally do. I'm normally super hydrated. I'm running around, but I also drink a lot of water, and I'm drinking a lot of water throughout the day. Somehow or another though, maybe I'm walking less. Besides for it, I purposely go take a walk, and it's much harder for some reason. So just being mindful of that. When you're aware of it, it's easier to deal with it. So structure, we've talked about structure in the past, especially as it relates to children. Bonding, time for bonding with family, time for spouses to talk with each other, but not just the old conversations and the old arguments or the old, you know, or just like what you do with your day kinds of things, but talking about your dreams, about your feelings, about ideas and ideals. And we talked a little bit about some of those things last week, but even deeper than that, you can go even deeper than we talked about last week. And here's one that we, again, have touched on before Pesach, but it's something that I want to just talk about from a psychological level as well, which is creative activity. I know one of you told me recently that you pulled your guitar out. I think that's great. I think that's awesome. By the way, even halachically, there are many opinions that say that, there's a lot of room to be lenient when it comes to that kind of thing, even though it's the sphere right now. Okay? Obviously, you have to ask your rabbi, but there's certainly room for it. Because if you can create musically, if you can engage in artistic activity, if you can engage in artistic activity, which my children are super artistic, they have more art in their pinky than I have in my life. So this is from my 11-year-old. I don't know how much you can see of it. Yeah, it took her about 3 minutes, something like that. My 15-year-old is working with canvas and acrylic across the table over here. And she's finished a couple layers. But that artistic activity, why is that so important? So if you've ever done any sort of trauma work or in your own experiences, we know that trauma, I'm going to say this very, very succinctly and very simply. I don't want to have a whole, master's level discussion about trauma right now, but there's two halves of our brain. And there's the right side and the left side. There's the thinking brain, the logical brain, and then there's the other parts of our brain that are more artistic, there's music, etc. And in order for us to process an experience, there is the corpus callosum goes in the middle of the two, in the middle of the two parts of the brain. So there are fibers, right? Neural fibers that connect the two halves of the brain. And they know this from, functional MRIs. You have to have the experience go from one side of the brain to the other and back, etc. That's where EMDR comes from. Those of you familiar with EMDR, with the lights and the tapping and the different stuff, moving the different parts of the body at the same time. There's a lot of very interesting things about this. But the idea basically is you have two parts of your brain. Now, the part of your brain that stores agony and pain is not the logical part of your brain. That's why you can't solve these things with logic. So, God forbid somebody has PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, which means that after the trauma, they're stuck there. Why are they stuck there? Because they got stuck in the brain. Because what happens is that part of the brain that holds on to that stress so tightly, but you can do things to dilute it. You can do things to loosen it up. You can do things that will help you process it so that it goes to the other part of the brain so you can grow from it as opposed to being stuck with it. And you can dilute it by activating the part of the brain by doing artistic or musical activities, writing poetry, singing songs, artwork, singing Mirot on Shabbat as a family, not just, to be Yossi, but like to really get into it, to enjoy it. Doing artwork, These help free the brain somewhat of the stranglehold that the brain has on you because of the heavy feelings within you. So this is number four. So again, we have number one, you're normal. Number two, validating other people and the fact that they're normal. Number three is the self-awareness. And number four is the importance of routine, schedule, and structure, but also expanding that to you know, beyond the typical of, you know, what time you wake up and how much water you drink, but there's the family bonding and there's the creative activity as well. Number five, making time with family purposeful. Obviously, this is related to number four. Talking about things with your family that you don't normally talk about. Not about politics, not about disease, death, or corona, parnassa, or the lack of it. Not about other people or about problems. But talking about values. What makes us a family? And what's good about our family? What things we want to change or do different to make our family more functional so we can all be at ease? What things can we do to trust each other more? To have values-based discussions. There's a book called 13, what's it called? Mentally strong or healthy parents don't do. Okay, 13 things that mentally strong people don't do. And then, of course, they made a parenting book out of it, 13 things that mentally strong parents don't do. So one of the things that they recommend to do is to have a values-based discussion. Right? This is not such a chiddush. But there, it's not such a novel idea. But there, they actually add something very creative and very interesting, which is that you can make a poster. You know, you can come up. You can do a value sort. Are you familiar with value sorts? You can look them up online. A value sort basically is you have a list of values, and then you winnow them down so that that which you, you know, do you really value X, Y, and Z so highly? And given a choice, you know, between 50 different values, like what are your top 10? What are your top three? It's a very difficult but very fun and really engaging process. To do that with your family is pretty cool. Anyways, imagine you did a value sort with your family, and then you came up with your three top values, and then you make a poster, and you paint it, and then you put it on your wall. Our family stands for, et cetera. If you ask any of my children, what are our family rules? They will tell you that we have, well, the joke is we have four. We used to have three family rules. What are our three family rules? Listen, be kind, and be safe. Now, those of you who are parents, grandparents, et cetera, think about those three rules. Listen, be kind, and be safe. I guarantee you that 99% of your list of thousands of rules that you gave your kids, there's a rule against this, there's a rule against that, there's a rule to do this, a rule to do that. I guarantee it all fits into those three. And kids don't need thousands of rules, they need simple rules. Be kind, listen, and be safe. At some point with my young daughters, we had to add on another one, which was be appropriate. So that was our fourth, which was the fourth, okay? Which is be appropriate, because that kind of didn't really fit in. Maybe it would fit into listen, but sometimes at certain ages, depending on maturity and developmental levels, kids need reminders of other things too. Okay. So, but how about this on a deeper level? Here's where we get to the spirituality part of it. What are our beliefs? How are we as a family doing at a ruchnius level in terms of spirituality? Do we make time? Do we take time to talk about ruchniut? The world of the spirit? What, how about bitachon? What steps can we take as children, as teens, as adults to actualize our bitachon, our faith in Hashem? About relying on Hashem, about talking to Hashem throughout the day, not just Shacharis Mincha Maariv, but talking to Hashem throughout the day. And talking about that with our kids to help them develop a relationship with God. To talk about what it means to have spiritual longings. What does that mean? So tonight, in the, I don't want to call it a rehearsal, but you know, I was discussing with my oldest daughter, what am I going to talk about tonight? It's like, well, what are spiritual longings? What does that mean? So yeah, you can have spiritual longings in terms of what you want to do from a learning perspective, or maybe from a kavana perspective, or you know, doing mitzvot on a higher level, or just feeling a connection with Hashem, bringing Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence, into your life. You know, these are conversations that you can have that you don't normally have time for. But here, like, you know, someone told me recently, like, we talk so frequently, we talk so often, we don't have much to say because we're not doing anything different. Okay, well then let's bring the conversation up a notch. Let's talk about things that are not just our values, but let's talk about our beliefs and our spirituality. Going back to the research about simcha, there's a lot of research that says that simcha, or happiness, or going from dreary to cheery, is about setting goals, to writing a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. What are your dreams? What are your hopes? In Mishle, it says, "Be'in chazon yipara am." Without vision, you dwindle away. There's an exercise, and I'll give this to you as an exercise. And you can do this, and you can do it on your own, you can do it with your family. Do it as a couple. Do it on your own. Dream of family progress 4 times, 4 days in a row. That's it. That's the exercise. Dream of family progress 4 times, 4 days in a row. Why? You'll become happier and also probably accomplish your goals, by the way. Setting goals, and we can have a whole conversation about how do you set goals. What does goal setting look like, and having SMART goals, etc. But setting goals is very, very important to happiness. There's an idea that you might have heard of in the past. There's a fellow, he's an attorney, he was the head of Center for Ethics of California. I don't think he is anymore. His name is Michael Josephson. Here's a quote from him. He says, here's how you have to live your life. Imagine you're a fly on the wall at your own funeral. It's a little bit morbid, but it should be well taken. Imagine you're a fly on the wall at your own funeral. And you have the capacity, though, to think and feel, and you could see everything and understand everything going on. What would you want to be remembered by? What are the 3 ways you most want to be remembered? By your family, by your children, by your grandchildren. Have these in mind, and then live your life backwards. It's very, very powerful. And think about that. And that's a values exercise as well. And you know, we're all unique. There's a beautiful quote from the Breslover, from Nachman of Breslov. He talks about something called Shirat HaAsavim. It's become a fairly popular song. Shirat HaAsavim is a song of the grasses. And that is that the key to vitality is to tie into your own unique niggun, to tie into your own song, that every individual has their own song. There's a unique voice and melody of every Jewish soul. Okay, let's talk about hope. So what do we have so far? Number one, you're normal. Number two, validate other people. They're normal as well. Number three, be self-aware. Know what's going on, how you feel, and then you can deal with it. Number four, structure and routine, but on a deep level. Time for bonding with your family, for creative activity. Number five, make time with family purposeful during quarantine. Number six is hope. Hope is a very, very powerful, very, very powerful tool. Being hopeful is not the same thing as being in denial. It's also not the same thing as being optimistic. We'll talk about optimism and positive thinking soon. But right now we're talking about hopefulness. Hopefulness is a koach ha-nefesh. I hear this from Dr. Fox as well. My Rebbe and my mentor, both in psychology and in Torah as well. Hopefulness is a koach ha-nefesh. Does anyone know what the opposite of hope is? Yush, despair. Yush is one of the most destructive forces in the world. If you think about that, and you look at the contrast, right? You look at the contrast of hope, which is leading you up, and Yush, which leads you down. They're total opposites of each other. When you tap into hope, it's an energy of the soul itself. It's not just a bohemian idea or, you know, anything like that. But rather, what is it? It's an energy of the soul itself. Yaakov gave a bracha. L'shu'ascha kivinu Hashem. To your salvation, we hope. And the Medrash there in Bereishis says, Hakol b'kivui. The Medrash explains that you get through Yisurin, you get through difficulty through hope. You can get to Yeshua through to salvation. You can attain slicha, forgiveness. Chanina, which is God being gracious to you. The catalyst for acting these midot of Hashem, of God, is hopefulness. What does hopefulness look like? What does hopefulness look like? It's very simple. A rabbi says, oh, you should be hopeful. Okay, what does that look like? What does it mean to be hopeful? That we trust there will be better times. In our imaginative fantasies, we have wholesome images of what will happen when this is all done, of how we will have grown because of all of this. You know, everyone is saying we don't want to go back to normal. We want there to be a new normal. That's all part of that. And psychologically as well, when we feel hope, we calm down. Our heart rate settles. Our breathing rate slows down. And we begin to take on an internal glow But that internal glow, that state of mind, that state of heart, that state of spirituality, that's something that's actually a spiritual Torah Jewish perspective. Something for us to practice for ourselves, to train our children. Because for many of us, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. It's not that there's no light in the tunnel. You can't even see the tunnel yet. But we hope for the light because we have trust, we have faith, we have bitachon. And our hopefulness activates our bitachon to a way of thinking and behaving. But when we allow our minds, God forbid, to run into what-ifs and cynicism and worrying about things getting worse, that's maladaptive. That's unhealthy. We want to move rather into an adaptive place, to a positive place. Number 7, and I a little kind of hinted at this before. Optimism, positive thinking, is a remedy for the damaged circuitry in the brain that happens as a result of loss and trauma. If you're not familiar with the term, I encourage you to Google it. And if you want to text me, I can send you information about it on how to go about doing this. I encourage you to keep a gratitude journal. Many families over the last number of years have taken on a custom of going around the supper table, going around the Shabbat table and saying, what am I grateful for today? It tends to get old quickly because people don't use their imaginations. It's a beautiful story with the Chafetz Chaim. It's a bit of a ridiculous story from a certain perspective, but it's a beautiful story. Chafetz Chaim was approached by a student in his yeshiva. He says, Rebbe, I want to know the secret to davening. You know, I daven for so long, and I have so much concentration on every single word. But at the end of the day, I noticed that the Rosh Hashiva, or the Chafetz Chaim, your tefillah is so much longer than mine. Like, what's your trick? What's your secret? How are you so successful at davening? Chafetz Chaim said to him very kindly, he says, you know, I bet that you are a better davener than I am. I don't take so long to say all the words. But here's the thing. When I get to modim, before I bow and I say thank you to Hashem, what do? I stop and I think about what I'm grateful for. And if you look at the literature on gratitude, it's not just, oh, I'm grateful for my family. No. I'm grateful for my daughter who's sitting across from me, chosen to sit here so that I can have a live audience rather than just a Zoom audience. A Zoom audience is okay, but there's a lot of names in front of me. And some people have pictures up, whatever. It's fine. But I have a live audience right in front of me. It makes it much easier. It gives me energy. It gives me focus. So I'm so grateful, Rifki, to you that you're sitting here. You know, I'm so grateful to, you know, she who takes a broom to sweep the floor because we have two boys who are almost 3 and almost 1, right? And we do have to sweep multiple times a day. But I'm so grateful that when I walk around barefoot, I don't have crumbs under my feet. Okay, I'm giving some silly examples, but you got the idea. There's so much to be grateful for. When you stop and think about that and you meditate on that, it puts you in a different place. Shem Moach, like we said before. Simcha is, that's what your brain is. Whose example is inspiring to you? Who impresses you? How are other people managing and what are they doing to be nice to each other? And this will help us rewire our brains that tend to feel isolated or alone, or maybe that dejected sense of rejection because we can't socialize. This is called neurocognitive psychology. It's the ability to rewire your brain. It's something called neuroplasticity. It's one of my favorite words. That in Ecclesiastes. But neuroplasticity, look, everyone needs this. Everyone has their own unique sense of humor, that's fine. But neuroplasticity is the idea that, oh, I'm a certain way because I'm that way. No, the way Hashem created us is that we can rewire our brains, create new connections, and create new realities. So again, let's review. What do we have? And then we'll end off with one last point. Number 1, you're feeling off. That's normal. It's okay. Right? You don't have to get stuck there. Number 2, other people are opening up to you. They're being vulnerable. Validate them. Don't shut them down. Don't shut yourself down either. Allow yourself to be vulnerable with yourself. Self-awareness. Scabs. The spiritual. How are you doing spiritually? How are you doing behaviorally? How are you doing emotionally? How are you doing somatically in your body? How are you doing in your thoughts? Be mindful of yourself. Give yourself a chance to be mindful, to become self-aware so you can deal with yourself. Create routine and structure. And do so in a deep way when it comes to your bonding with family, time for spouses, talk about their dreams, their feelings, their ideas, their ideals. Make sure you do creative activity. Operate both sides of your mind. Listen to inspiring music. Play beautiful music. Sing a song in the shower, wherever it works for you. Make time with your family purposeful. You're going to run out of things to talk about. Well, you can always talk about negativity. That's going to make things worse. That's maladaptive. So instead of talking about things that are that are, you know, I don't know, old and boring because there's not much new going on. So, you know, my conversation with my mother lately, she's been talking a lot about her family and her childhood and the values that her parents taught her. And it's fascinating. And we don't always have those conversations. We have them, but now we're having them more frequently. And what are our beliefs on a spiritual level? And what's our goal as a family? And how do I want to live my life? And what's doing a value sort and discovering that which is unique about me? And then, of course, being hopeful, which is a spiritual energy. And then again, there's the idea of being, of having gratitude and being a person who is a thankful person and focusing on the positive. And I want to end with one last thing, which is your role to play. When I look at myself as I go through this whole thing and as I try to grow from it, what's my most important role? I'm an adult who's a model for my family. I'm a model of somebody who hopefully has Yirat Shemayim, a relationship with God, facing the assignment, facing challenges. How do I cope? What are my children seeing from me? In the long run, I want our children to look back at this part of their lives. They'll say, you know, I remember how my parents held it together. They didn't scream. They weren't angry. They helped each other out. They helped us look at ourselves and identify tools and ways of coping. And Bezran Hashem Bekarov, when this is all over, when we're ready to breathe easy and we ask ourselves, how do we get through it? How do we grow with it? How do we grow from it? God willing, give you a bracha, give myself a bracha, that we'll be able to testify about ourselves that despite the losses and devastation and the sadness, we increased our sense of resilience. We enhanced our psychological coping. We improved and built on our spiritual world. We became more spiritual world people, people that are closer to Hashem, people who talk to Hashem, people who gain a sense of Hashem being here with us. Because that's really what we're going for. And finally, we end up with a pasuk, V'koyeve Hashem yachalitzu koach, which means that those who hope to Hashem, if we place our hope in Hashem, He will rebuild our strength. So these are some ways, some tools for going from a place of, you know, dreariness to a place of cheeriness, that in a very deep and important way, where we can go to, we can become people that are growing from this in a tremendous way, so we will be that much happier. I want to thank everybody for coming. There's one person who's here tonight that I understand had a very, very challenging day. And I'm so inspired by you for showing up tonight to this year. You're the most, one of the most, if not the most inspiring person that I know. So thank you. I won't embarrass you. I won't mention your name. But I want to thank you so much for coming to the shir tonight. And I hope that, Bezan Hashem, you know, you have a refuah shleima and that you feel really good. And we should all be zocha Bezan Hashem to tremendous brachot and to yeshuot, to salvation and to blessings. If anybody would like to share anything, all you have to do is hit the space bar and you will unmute yourself and I'm happy to take comments or listen to anything that you may want to share. Or if you have any questions. You can also do so via the chat as well. That would be fine.